Shocker, how you doing?
82 he shot, hey?
Yes, I think that's like only his second time over 80 in his career or something.
That's amazing. Now, what would that be equivalent to? Oh, well, one of us shooter, like,
it's hard. It's hard because, you know, the courses that they play on are so much harder than the course the average guys like us play on, right? So,
if just in terms of a bad day golfing for you, like Tiger had today, what would that end up being? Like,
well,
for me, for as bad a day as Tiger had today, I bet that's like about a 112 for me.
Well, I guess it's because Tiger, let's say, would usually be like a 69 or 68, let's say, on average. Now, maybe not the last few years, right? So that's 13 shots worse. But then I wonder for him if that 13 shots worse really equates to like 20 worse shots for
that's
guys like
saying.
Us. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm well into the hundies and probably – I mean, that is a tremendously – he's had a hard week, though, right? Didn't he lose a tooth or something? Or now he's playing bad?
Yeah, well – if he takes an 8, yeah, it's probably equivalent. I don't even know what you would call if you take a 13, but that's probably what it would be for us.
Oh, Tiger, how the mighty have fallen, eh?
Yeah. Oh, hey, man, in pro sports, like, even if Tiger, you know what, like, hey, if woman gate, whatever you want to call it, sleaze
gate,
phone gate, I don't care what you want to call it. Even if that doesn't...
Elon gate?
Yeah. Well, hey.
Let's go with that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it might be a little
Nord
bit...
gate. Yeah. Okay. Woodgate? How about Woodgate? Woodgate.
Yeah, well, that would be fitting on many terms, on many levels. He was never going to recapture because no athlete in any sport, when you look at them, like most of them in pro sports have like a 10-year window of really that greatness. And then, you know, they fall off a little bit. And so the people that thought he was going to come back and just dominate, like he was never going to do it again, even if he didn't get injured, because no one in pro sports at any level does it because it's just too hard.
Yeah. Well, just like you get into that zone, and you only are entitled to be in that zone for a short period of time in your life and what you do with it. Few athletes are able to just stay in that ridiculous zone for, like Kobe right now, like, not that I pretend to know a whole pile about basketball, but for years and years, Kobe is that guy. He's the elite, the absolute elite. And now how does he bounce back from, you know, I think his season's over and shoulder surgery and all that kind of stuff. So it's like you have this finite window to be the best there is. And for a golfer, you'd think it would have been able to last longer for a golfer, you know, because it's not a contact sport. It's not a, you know, it just looked like Tiger was going to be able to stay on top, break all the records and all that. But man, it just fell apart.
Yeah, it's tough. It's very difficult for I. You know what? I hope he wins at least one more major, just because that would reignite the Wood fans to believe that he could catch Jack. Which, you know, and not to hey, I'll pump my own horn first. I said well before Elon that he wasn't going to catch Jack because you look at the statistical data. It was too hard. It's, you know, to win in this day and age is hard, and to win five majors now, there's no chance. He's just not going to do it. Not going to happen.
There you go.
Now, the Oilers, they got no chance to catch the Buffalo Sabres for 30th place either. Like, no chance. The Sabres, they are beyond bad.
And they're about to get worse, too. That's the funny thing. Like, they're trading some of their better players here shortly. I mean, they couldn't get out of their own zone. They made the Oilers look like Harlem Globetrotters last night at times. That one shift where it was like, who ended up scoring? It was a 2-on-1. I think when Lander got his
Lander
goal.
And Purcell, yep.
It was ridiculous. It was like they were just skating in circles around them. They were really, really bad. So you almost have to keep everything in perspective when you're patting people on the back for how great some people played last night. It's just that Buffalo team is just that bad.
Yeah. So now I know yesterday, and I wrote the article today in Oilers Nation, why I still don't believe trading Hendricks or Gordon makes any sense, because I dove into what bottom 10 first round picks are or anything else. Trust me, you're talking 4 or 5 years on a maybe, and I don't see how it improves this team because you know, the Edmonton Oilers, you know, Bob McKenzie, it's becoming a McDavid draft, and it doesn't mean that Eichel isn't a very good player. He's just not Connor McDavid, which is probably a good thing for him, so maybe people will have more realistic expectations. But, you know, the Edmonton Oilers, the percentage is only 4% difference if they're finishing 27th or 29th.
Yeah. As to whether or not they get the number one pick, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still think it's a two-player draft. McDavid certainly started to separate himself when he came back from his injury, like regained that separation, and he's been good. But I mean, I saw Eichel play in the tournament, and he's a pretty unbelievable player. He's a pretty special player too. So I would still suggest that it's a two-horse draft, that McDavid will go first, but that Eichel, still the caliber of that prospect is still pretty significant.
Like, is he that much better than Hall and Nugent Hopkins?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's kind of apples to oranges right now. I mean, I think back to Nugent Hopkins and the way he looked at that age. I mean, Eichel is a more dominant player at the same age than Nugent Hopkins was at that level. You know, he just controlled games, even at the World Junior level. Everything funneled through him on that U.S. squad. So I was really impressed with him. I think there's a pretty incredible player there. Projecting how much better he's going to be than Taylor Hall or these other guys, I think the general consensus is these are two potentially generational players, and that was never said about Taylor Hall. So I guess the scouting world in general is projecting that he will probably be better.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that? I talked to 6 scouts, and not one of them used the generational term. They don't even know where it came from. They think it's being overhyped by a lot of people. Because now, that I haven't talked to every scout, so maybe one's used it. But the 6 different scouts, you know, from and they've been across. These are 3 Western League scouts, 2 Ontario guys, and 1 Quebec League scout, and they all were guys who didn't use the they said he's exceptional, but they didn't use the generational term. They said, you know, McDavid, they get it, but they don't get it for Eichel. Doesn't mean he's a bad player, but those guys themselves said they've never used it.
Yeah, well, and it's a loose term, too. Like, what does that really mean? Like, who is and who isn't? I mean, Sidney Crosby is and was. So there really hasn't been another one since then. I mean, they're really, like, Sid is kind of the bar. And there hasn't been another pick like that. You know, you look through the first overall picks. I mean, Stamkos is a heck of a good player. With generational talent, I'm not sure. So, yeah, it's a loose term. But getting back to where we picked up or finished yesterday about Gordon or Hendricks or whatever, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but do you think that Boyd Gordon is going to be part of this team in 15 months? You know, at the end of next season, when his contract
you can't keep living in the – you can't live life in the future. I don't think you can. The order – so let's say Boyd Gordon won't be a part of the team in 15 months. Okay, fine. So who's going to be better in the meantime? It sure as heck won't be the player they're getting in the draft.
No, it won't be.
So you're making your team worse again. When does that cycle stop?
Yeah, good question. When you stop being out of it by October the 30th. I mean,
yeah, but if you're constantly,
so long.
But if you're constantly getting rid of proven NHL players because you think, well, they might not re-sign in the summer of 2016, then that means 2015-16 is going to be another lost year again.
Yeah, well, I know what you're saying. Do you think that 2015-16 has a chance to be anything other than a non-playoff year? Like, are the Oilers going to accomplish anything in this offseason outside of drafting Connor McDavid that's going to put them in the playoffs next year?
No, I don't see them being a playoff team, but they have to show some improvement. So this time next year, the Oilers are 2 points out of the playoffs, and their players actually know what it feels like to play in a meaningful game. And to me, that's the improvement enough. It's not from going from 29th to 16th. I think that's unrealistic.
Yeah, no, but that was supposed to be this year. Right, this was supposed to be the year where, oh, I don't expect them to make the playoffs, but they'll be in the fight. Nope, didn't happen. And so now it's about, well, how good a player are they going to get in this draft? And do they have the potential of getting one of those 2 very, very high-end players or not? And when's a realistic timeline for them to be competitive? So, I'm not saying they have to trade Boyd Gordon. I'm not saying, like, oh, they have to do this for the sake of it. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if someone comes along to say, we'll give you a second-round pick for that guy, you go, well, okay. Like, I think you got to think about it. Because at the draft or in the offseason or whenever, I mean, you can maneuver. Like, that. Look at the deal they made for David Perron, right? They say all you want about, oh, he asked for more ice time, so they had to get rid of him. No. They needed to water down their team. Their team was the worst team after they made that trade than before. But they got another bullet in their gun for the draft. I'm telling you, that's what they're doing. David Perron had another year left on his deal, too. So why aren't we talking about what a draft?
Because it was a bad trade, Ryan. I talked about it as a bad trade at the time. because David Perron went to them and said he wanted more ice time, and obviously they didn't agree with him, so they traded him. And that's another move. And they also did it because they felt like, you know what, we have an abundance of wingers because Pouliot can be a top six winger in their mind. And Pouliot, since the trade, obviously has proven them, you know what, hey, maybe he can be a 20-goal scorer. I don't know if he'll ever score 28 like Perron did, right? But maybe he can become a 20-goal scorer in Edmonton. Maybe. So that's why they made the trade, because they actually had – it's the one position they had depth. And I still don't like the trade because it's a crapshoot to maybe help them in 3 years. It makes them worse now, and that's the thing. Right, but at least they had some depth at wing. They've got no depth in the organization at center.
But, like, the shoe dropped when Mackey made that trade. That was the sign that, okay, they're moving legitimate players out for picks. They're trying to make themselves worse, and they're gunning for a really high draft pick this year. So does it make any sense to half-ass it at that? To just go, like, once they've decided that's the way they're going.
Well, I disagree with that.
Does it make any sense to only go halfway?
Well,
like,
if that's the way they were doing, why they acquired Derek Roy, who's significantly better than Mark Arcabello at a more important position?
Well, and I think that's and it's a good point. It's kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth. Here they're improving their team, yet moving guys. But I think that was kind of like, they had to move Draisaitl. They knew they had to move Draisaitl, or they were going to seriously harm the guy's development. So they had to do something, and so they did. They made a move, and you know what? At the time, you think they knew they were going to get Derek Roy, and he was going to go on a little bit of a points tear, and that it was going to make that much of a difference? I don't know if they necessarily knew that. He was a warm body that was available. If I recall, could they not have had on waivers? So, like, he was a warm body. He filled a spot. I don't think they were thinking, yeah, we're really gonna take a step here when we get this guy. I just think, like, Mackey is gunning for a really high draft pick this year. And there are those who would suggest getting a really high draft pick this year could probably help them pretty quickly. So if you've already spelled off assets and that's the way you're going with it, then go with it. And the question becomes, when's the timetable for them to be competitive again? And it might not be within the time frame of Boyd Gordon being an Edmonton Oiler anymore. So if they can do something that adds to their chances of drafting really, really high, while at the same time puts another bullet in their gun for the draft, then, I don't know, they've kind of already stepped over that cliff. So why half-ass it?
Yeah, I think the Perron thing was more of off-ice and the fact they had depth on the wing.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was misused from the beginning, like 28 goals. The guy, he was misused from the beginning. And I don't blame David for being frustrated or wanting more ice time. I don't think he was handled properly. They had a guy who finally came in and worked hard and showed a little bit of grit, scored goals. And because he was versatile, he was banished to a line with an 18-year-old center, a 19-year-old center, and an inconsistent winger. And it was a disaster for Perron. So I think it was mishandled from the start. They should have given David Perron some opportunity up to be a legitimate, consistent goal scorer in their lineup, because that's what he showed he could be. And instead, he's floundering around with guys that he just can't rely on.
Well, the problem is you get rid of Gordon or Hendricks. Those guys play all your defensive zone starts. Those are third-line guys. They're not too expensive. Like, Hendricks makes 1.85 as a third-line winger, who, by the way, has 6 goals, which is more than Yakupov has, and more than a lot of other offensive guys in the team. So he might finish the season with 10 goals on your third line, who takes defensive zone starts, kills penalties. He's a bargain.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, but, like, they're good players. Hendricks is having a really nice year this year. And he can still skate, which leads you to believe maybe he's got another good year left in him at least. Boyd Gordon's a soldier, man. He does all the right things. He's gutsy. He plays hard. He blocks shots. He wins faceoffs. All those types of things, for sure. Not saying trade him because he's not a good player. But just based on the direction that this team is heading in, like, buddy, they are the second worst team in the NHL. Like, they are that bad. Like, they're that bad. So when you're the second worst team in the NHL, yeah, you want to try and get better for sure, but they have an opportunity here. They have an opportunity at this year's draft. They have an opportunity this offseason, and they've already taken some steps to water down their lineup. So the timeline that they're going to get better in probably doesn't involve Boyd Gordon unless he's doing another 2- or 3-year deal. And picking fifth this year doesn't help the Oilers. Picking one, picking two, some would debate whether picking three this year or not. One of those spots probably helps this team right away.
Yeah, I don't know. Dylan Strome's a pretty good player. I don't.
Sure.
And the Oilers are 29th, right? Like, even not moving Boyd Gordon isn't going to suddenly vault them up to 27th. Like, they still have to improve as a team, and I'm not sure they can do that. Like, they're trading Jeff Petrie, who plays the most minutes on their blue line, because they have to, because he's a UFA, and they're not going to lose him for nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, you can get pretty good players with second-round picks at the draft. You can fill holes and get pretty good players with you know, late first, early second-round picks. You can fill holes. Now, Craig hasn't necessarily shown the ability to go out and find them and get them. But you can find those players. It's the top half of their lineup where they need to be better. Their top three or four on defense and their top two lines where they have to get better. And that's done through having assets that are really, really valuable. So it's your first round picks that you can either pick those players or you can trade those picks for those players. But the bottom half of their lineup, buddy, I'm just not that worried about it. You can find those guys. It's putting the players in place in the meaningful positions that are going to help them turn the corner.
Shocker, who are you picking in the Super Bowl?
I will go the Patriots, I think. Hey, all this adversity and this garbage and stuff they've been dealing with, and maybe they come out and counterpunch a little, and it galvanizes and unites them, so we'll go with them. How about you?
Yeah, I'm picking the Patriots, even though I don't want to. Just because I don't
just
like
can't,
them. No, I don't like
just them. The Brady factor or what?
No, I'm a Dolphins fan, so I'm picking the Patriots because I hate them. But I just, yeah, you know what? Winning back-to-backs in any league is tough, and
yeah.
Seattle is not as dominant this year as they were last year.
No. There you go. Well, we'll talk about it Monday.
Have a good one. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too, pal.